from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Now, it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the easy bake oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Happy Friday out there. August 16th, 2024 is the date, and welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I'm your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn, on X at @Kuhn71. I'm alongside, as always, the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on X at @CDunning99. Connor, how's it going?
Going well, Gabe. How are you?
I am doing well, brother. I am doing well. Can't complain. Have a nice weekend planned ahead of me. Got to move some things in the house. Get ready for the baby. And I'm going to be watching some NFL preseason football.
Nice.
I don't know about you.
I'll be seeing some alien Romulus.
Oh, really?
In just a few hours.
Oh. Okay. There you go. You excited? You're excited.
Very excited. Huge fan of the franchise.
Yep. Now, we have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. I'm going to open on ESPN college football list season. We have top 100 players. I want to really focus on the top 10 and really the top one. For you Vol fans, I think you'll be happy who came in at number one. We'll also talk about the top 10 quarterbacks in college football per ESPN. As far as guests are concerned on the show today, we're going to have Jarvis Greer, formerly at WMC for 40-plus years. Now he's with Grind City Media doing the Grizz beat. We have to discuss Memphis football. On top of the Grizzly schedule release that he covered yesterday, we're going to have to pay attention very, very closely to what Jarvis has to say about it, because I value his opinion. There's no question about it. Now, coming up at 5 o'clock, David Cobble joined from CBS, college football and college basketball, every single Monday, Wednesday, Friday. He joins the show. And then 6 o'clock, very pleased. I was on Jason and John today, and Jason has decided to return the favor to me.
It was a home and home.
Yes, we had a nice home and home. We can agree upon it, as opposed to, you know, Memphis reaching out to some of these Power Fives, Power Fours. Jason Smith agreed on a home and home. We'll have him on. He's from Jason and John, right here on 92.9 FM, ESPN, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Nice three-hour show that you've gotten already here today that I was a part of, right there at 125. But we'll talk about the Grizzly schedule release with him. Talk about the he posted a picture the other day, because he was over there. I guess his son was playing at the Memphis Event Center, but he posted a picture of the press box before it was taken down over at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium, and there was still a person in there. We're going to have to ask him if it was Jeff Calkins. Jeff, you know, he was being, you know, Sly yesterday. He said it wasn't him, but we have to confirm this with multiple people. Everybody thinks that Jeff Calkins was the man up there in the press box trying to tab one more column before it went down. But it went down yesterday. Talked to him about that. And then his counterpart on Jason and John, John Martin, wrote a really interesting article. And I really haven't gotten your opinion on this either, Connor, having been in Memphis your whole life. But it was about the Memphis high school basketball scene and how these guys aren't staying home anymore, and the basketball scene has taken hits because of it. And Jason, of course, covered preps. He was in all these high school gyms from about 2003 to 2010 before he moved in the Memphis basketball beat reporter position for the Commercial Appeal. I want to ask him about his opinion on the devolving, I guess, is the best way of putting, of the Memphis preps basketball scene. Just feels like people are not latching on quite as much as they used to, and it's always been a big part of what we do here in the city of Memphis on the sports scene. Blitz will be at 6:30. We'll talk about Drake May. He looked better last night. He looked better.
He's got a cannon. At the end of the day.
He sure does.
He's got a rocket.
There's some things not to like, though, but I'll answer the question for you. Should the Pats start Drake May, the number two overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft? Should they start him week one over Jacoby Brissett? We know that Jerod Mayo has said if he's better than Jacoby Brissett, he'll start. And then yesterday he said that the quarterback competition definitely isn't over. But I'll answer that question. Should the Pats start Drake May week one? And we have a U.S. men's national soccer team hire that is worth discussing. And it's actually a good one. It's a good one. I think coming off of the Greg Berhalter era, anything was going to be nice. I might have to have Lawrence Dockery on here relatively soon to talk about this hire. But seems like most people that follow U.S. men's soccer, they like this hire.
Those smarter than us.
Those smarter than us
are very pleased.
Yes, they tend to enjoy it. And also, throughout the show, we'll give you FedEx St. Jude Championship updates as we go along. Now, list season, how about it? We have the top 100 players. I want to focus on the top 10 for ESPN. Coming in at number 10, ESPN put Malachi Starks, the safety from Georgia, 31 solo tackles last year, 3 INTs, 7 passes defended. His last year's ranking was 57. I think the best offensive lineman in the country comes in at number 9, Kelvin Banks Jr., the left tackle from Texas. Ollie Gordon at number 8, which I honestly, and this is Oklahoma State's running back. He was the leading rusher in college football last year, 1,732 yards, and I think 21 TDs might have been the rushing touchdown leader as well. I'm not fully sure. I didn't check that last night or this morning or last night when I was putting this all together. Last year's ranking was 11. He moves up to number 8. He may be a little bit low rated considering what he does for that team. Number 7 is the only quarterback on this list, believe it or not. Carson Beck from Georgia. We expect a big season from him, but we'll see how it all unfolds. Will Campbell, the offensive lineman, left tackle from LSU, is at number 6. Number 5, Luther Burden, wide receiver from Missouri. We got to see him last year. Will Johnson, the cornerback from Michigan, at number 4. Travis Hunter at number 3. Number 2, D-tackle from Michigan. Mason Graham. And I think they have probably the best 2 D-tackles in the country on the same defensive line, Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant. That makes me think that Michigan will still be relatively solid this year, even with Sherrone Moore and that dark cloud over their program with all the investigations. Mason Graham, though, comes in at number 2. And then number 1, shout out to the Vol fans out there. As much as it pains me to say, I think they got number 1 right. James Pierce Jr., defensive end from Tennessee, comes in at number 1. He didn't have that many tackles, but he had 9.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, 1 interception. He led the country in pass rush win rate, 16.5 tackles for loss. It makes a whole lot of sense. He moved himself up from not being ranked in the 2023 rankings in the top 100 to number 1. And I really like his skill set and what he can bring to that Tennessee team. Now, I think there's 2 teams in particular that we always follow in the SEC, and the question's always going to be about their defense because they play up-tempo offense, and they play, generally speaking, defense at a different type of pace because their offense paces them onto the field a whole lot more. They have to play a lot of snaps, but it's usually Tennessee and Ole Miss. I've already talked about Ole Miss having the bodies up front that I think they can compete. They have SEC bodies consistently. They have some depth on that side of the ball. You feel good about their front 7. I think Tennessee is being under-talked about in that conversation as well. You have James Pierce Jr., who can get off the edge better than anybody in the country, could be a number 1 overall draft pick by the time we talk about this next year. Certainly will be a top 10 draft pick, barring injury. But also you have Omari Thomas from the city. You have guys up front. Bryson Eason, who was a linebacker at Whitehaven, he's moved to the D-line, and he's definitely got some ability up there. I think Tennessee also has the SEC bodies. The difference between them and Ole Miss, I think in the grand scheme of things, though, comes down to the depth. They just don't have as many bodies behind those starting bodies to really compete consistently on the defensive side of the ball in their front seven as you get into the heart of the SEC schedule. But all of this will be told by the time we get to season. But James Pierce being number one, I think I really like this list for the most part. And the reason I like it is almost an all five, top five, almost all defensive besides Luther Burden.
They didn't get
they only had one quarterback in
it.
I thought that was beautiful. And I think the ESPN has actually done pretty well with most of these lists that they've put out before the college football season.
It has been surprising. Even the top players of just, you know, the 2000s, they had defensive guys at the top, too. It wasn't just quarterback heavy. So, no, I, to be quite honest with you, as a Tennessee, you know, fan, I was surprised to see Pierce number one, but I was it was a pleasant surprise. And what's crazy about him is he has like 16 and a half tackles for loss, 12 sacks in his first two seasons, but he's only started three games. So it's going to be a really big season for him. And like you said, he's been projected to be a top five pick in the 2025 NFL draft. His expertise comes in the running game. So I think that Tennessee's defense running the ball, or their run defense, is going to be really good. It's going to come down to, in my opinion, the secondary.
Well, I think the reason he hasn't started is because they have focused him more on the passing game. What he has to focus on more is being able to stop the run, being an every down defensive end. And I think with the size, the weight he has seemingly put on this offseason, what you hear from the Tennessee staff about what he is doing this offseason and through the early part of training camp, I think that you'll see a more well-rounded player because he knows he has to do that going into the next level. He's going to have to be an every-down guy if he wants to be a top-10 pick.
He was really good in the bowl game.
Yes, of course.
Really good in the bowl game.
Of course. And I'll say this, on College Football 25, he's ridiculous.
Is he?
He's one of the highest-rated players in the game, and he just cannot be blocked.
I have still yet to play anything outside of Road to Glory in the one online game that I played. So I've only the only defense I've ever played with on that game is Duke.
Oh, yeah.
It went well. I won the game.
Okay, it's Duke, though. Come on.
Hey, I still got the dub. That's all that matters.
I guess so. But I like this. I like this list because you see ESPN focusing on really who is the best player in college football.
Okay.
Who are the best players in college football instead of just going quarterback heavy, who's going to win the Heisman popularity contest?
Now, we got to talk about it. We got to talk about it.
Yes, I know where you're going with it.
How isn't there a single Tiger on this list?
The one that you would focus on being, I guess there's two. You could go Rock Taylor, although I think there's a lot of wide receivers around the country that are just really, really good 1,000-yard wide receivers. It's really hard to break that list, break into a top 100, break into, you know, a list as when it comes to wide receivers in today's day and age, because we just air out the ball. We go air raid style. We throw the ball downfield. I was kind of floored, though. I got to be honest that Seth Hennigan was not on this list, because you go down this list. I know Caden Salter has proved a lot at Liberty, definitely got to the New Year's Six bowl game, although they got absolutely slaughtered by Oregon. But he came in at number 71. Another guy that actually was really high out of the group of five, number 25, was actually Ashton Jeanty from Boise State. He ran for 1,300 yards last year. I'm going to be honest, though. I was kind of taken aback by the fact that no Tigers were on there. I thought that you could put Seth Hennigan somewhere between 80 and 100. He's somewhere in there. When you talk about a four-year returning starting quarterback, a guy that's put up the numbers that he's put up, he already broke the passing yards record here at the University of Memphis, and he can add on to that massively with the supporting cast he has. I thought you could break him into the top 100 just based on production. Maybe based on like the Lifetime Achievement Award. Usually you get somebody giving that check mark to a guy like Seth Hennigan, but I was wildly surprised he didn't even get to crack it.
I was surprised when they had, and no disrespect toward him, because I think he's expected to have a very good season at USC after he was behind Caleb Williams. I know he had a massive game in the bowl game, but like if Miller Moss makes the list, like you're telling me that Seth Hennigan can't make it?
Miller Moss.
He made the list out of pure potential, and it's like we've got somebody here.
You know who's right after Miller Moss? Miller Moss 91, Nico.
Yeah.
I'm Aliava.
Hey,
92.
Hey, hey.
I believe in him. Avery Johnson from Kansas State, who hasn't done anything for Kansas State because Will Howard's been the starting quarterback over there. He got in at 93. Like, you just look at some of these names and the lack of production or the lack of being able to prove it because they haven't been on the field. Seth Hennigan's done that three times over. He did it as a true freshman when he was 17 years old and still had really good statistics to go with it, to back it up. It's just surprising to me that the production wasn't taken into consideration when it came to Seth Hennigan.
Yes, I was surprised that he wasn't on there, especially because of all the hype, preseason hype that Memphis has been getting from sites, to be quite honest, like ESPN. I just thought that they'd have at least one person on there, and it seemed like the obvious one would have been Seth Hennigan. And I was expecting just to see him between 80 to 100.
It's generally strange to talk about Memphis as a the college football playoff representative from the group of five and not have a single top 100 player.
I suppose what's odd about it, too, is that you do have a Liberty player. You do have a Boise State player on there. And it's like, just put
Hell, Seth you have an Old Dominion there. Player. You have Jason Henderson.
Wait, really?
He's a really good linebacker.
I missed that one.
He's a really good linebacker. He has 324 tackles in 24 games.
Outside of that, though, did you see any glaring omissions or any huge surprises in the list? To be quite honest, when we went through it, we were both kind of like, no, it's a pretty good list.
No, it's a pretty good list. I don't really have much of an issue with it. They got all the Georgia, you know, pieces on there. They got all the best players on the best teams on there. But I think that as we get into the season, a guy like Seth Hennigan can show that he belonged on this top 100 list. I don't think he's going to, you know, lose any sleep over it. But I think he can be able to show him, Rock Taylor, you know, Mario Anderson Jr. maybe. We'll see what he does at the running back position. I think guys like that can definitely show they belong in this top 100 list by the time the season gets going. Now, also, ESPN ranked their top 10 quarterbacks in college football, and I don't know. I mean, this list, I think, lacks a little bit of projection, because you know I'm very high on Jalen Milroe. That's the guy I have tabbed as my Heisman winner going into this year, because Kalen DeBoer knows how to use the legs of quarterbacks like he did with Michael Penix Jr. when he was at Indiana. He knows how to throw the ball downfield like he did with Michael Penix Jr. when he was at Washington. I think that that is a match made in heaven. Jalen Milroe has fixed his throwing motion. They're going to use his legs a little bit more. I think he will be probably the best dual threat quarterback in the entire country going into this season. He came in at number three, though. It doesn't surprise me that Carson Beck's at the top, but this is how it went. Carson Beck, number one. Dylan Gabriel, number two. Jalen Milroe, number three. Four Quinn Ewers, five Shedeur Sanders, six Jalen Daniels from Kansas, seven Jackson Dart from Ole Miss, eight Noah Fifita from Arizona, nine Cam Rising, which I'll get to that in a second, and number 10, Cam Ward, who is at Miami now after spending some time at Washington State. I like to see Cam Ward get in there because I think his skill set is great. He's just got to take care of the football a whole lot better. He had a start to the season last year that looked like he'd be on the short list for Heisman, and then he started to slow down pretty drastically as the season wore on. I guess my biggest issue with this list is Jalen Milroe should probably be a little higher. I think if we're projecting what's going to happen this year, Jalen Milroe would be my number one. I know that that sounds wild because nobody's talking about him as an NFL draft prospect, and people are talking about Carson Beck as the number one pick in the NFL draft heading into next year. But when we talk about the guys that are best suited to have a massive year statistically, to be in that Heisman running, I think Jalen Milroe tops this list. I think Jalen Milroe should be shot up there. I know some people are a little bit cold on him based on what happened last year, the early part of the season, losing to Texas. He got sat down in that South Florida game, but we saw the last six games of the year, this guy came into his own. He started making those intermediate throws. They started using his legs a little bit more. And we're talking about a guy in Bill O'Brien at the offensive coordinator position that was just not very inventive. Now you have a guy by the name of Kalen DeBoer who is coaching that team who is about the most inventive offensive mind in the country. I really think Jalen Milroe can take this top spot by the time we get into season.
Do you think people are underrating Alabama? I know they're top five,
100%.
But it feels like that because of the coaching change, people were just pretending as if all of the talent left Alabama, but then when you actually take a look, you're like, oh, they still have all of it.
They still have all of it, and I think they've bettered themselves at a lot of positions. Their offensive line, I think, will be substantially better. They brought in Parker Brailsford, who might be the best center in the country from Washington, came over with Kalen DeBoer. I think the offensive line's going to be better. You lost some pieces out of the secondary, Terrion Arnold in particular, so you may have to replace him. But I've seen Alabama in the past. When we talk about DBU, defensive back university, in the history of college football, LSU probably at the top, Alabama right there behind. Think about all the names they've had. I just have a feeling they'll be able to replace Terrion Arnold with a relatively big name that can make some things happen this year. And they brought in Damani Jackson from USC, who is a highly productive player at the cornerback position. I think that guy could step in and take that Terrion Arnold role on. And then up front, yeah, you've lost some defensive ends the past couple of years. But at the same time, I feel like you have enough up there and a lot of depth, a lot of SEC-caliber bodies that can go make that happen for you. I just think this team is really flying under the radar. And when we look at some teams around the country, I think when we talk about like Texas and Ohio State, and Ohio State just named Will Howard their starting quarterback, that's not a surprise in the slightest. But there's questions that are being asked about Alabama that aren't being asked about Texas, who lost a bunch of players in the NFL draft. They're two D tackles, wide receiver, Xavier Worthy, and A.D. Mitchell are no longer there. They have two running backs. There's not a lot of questions being asked about them, but Alabama is being asked about just because of the change at the top. And the change at the top is massive. You lose Nick Saban, it's huge. But Kalen DeBoer, he turned Washington from a 5-7 team that fired their coach in the middle of the year to a national championship runner-up in two seasons. Took over a terrible situation and made it into gold. And made it to where Washington could, you know, back up into Jed Fish as a coach who did really well at Arizona. They were struggling to find coaches. They found Kalen DeBoer, and they are better because of it. I think there's not going to be that massive of a drop-off with the talent that's still on that Alabama roster. But I brought up Texas. I also think Ohio State's in a situation where I think they're getting a little bit too much credit early in the season. And I understand they still have a Mecca Egbuka on the outside, good wide receiver room. Their running back room is phenomenal. Their O-line should be decent. They have Travion Henderson, though, and Quinshon Judkins, who are both, by the way, back-to-back in the top 100 for ESPN for college football. But I look at that team, and I have questions about Will Howard. Will Howard, is that the guy that you really want to – you know, hang your hat on as a guy that's going to save that program, put them back into the spotlight where they were with quarterbacks between, you know, Dwayne Haskins, rest in peace, by the way. You had C.J. Stroud. Is that the guy that you really think is the Ohio State starting quarterback that's going to get them over the top and win a national championship under Ryan Day? I think most people have just sort of written that off as, yeah, I think he's good enough to go do that. But when you look at the place he left in Kansas State, they were ready to move on from him. They didn't really care that he left. They had Avery Johnson waiting in the wings, who's a top 100 player in the ESPN College Football Top 100. So I think there's questions being asked about Alabama that aren't being asked about the teams ahead of them in the AP poll and the coaches poll.
Very fair. Of the top 10 quarterbacks, which do you think has the most potential to fall out of that top 10? Like, if somebody is going to have a bad season within that top 10, who do you think is the
bad season,
the leading suspect?
Okay. I think there's a couple that we could look at.
I will also accept none. If that is your answer, I think that's okay.
Bear with me here.
Okay.
I think Shedeur Sanders is one of the best quarterbacks in the country. But let's see what that offensive line looks like, man. He took a lot of hits last year. He had a lot of injuries he had to deal with this offseason and rehab because his offensive line stunk. Let's see what he looks like this year after having gotten battered last year. I want to see if he has happy feet, but he's a good quarterback. The two guys I'd look at, one would be Noah Fifita from Arizona. Some people would say, okay, dude, shut up. He's a freshman last year, and he was phenomenal. He's got Tetaroa and McMillan on the outside, one of the best wide receivers in the country. But let's not forget, he has a coaching switch that he had to deal with this offseason. And when you have a coaching switch, you have to learn a new offense, learn new words, you know, trigger words to get that offense off of the ground. I think there could be a learning process for Noah Fifita, and maybe that will hamper him and hurt him at the start of the season. And then also, I like Cam Rising a lot. I do. But we're talking about a guy who's in his fifth year now at Utah, and he turns around and hands the ball off a hell of a lot. Like, I just don't view him as this. I view him more in that game manager role. He uses legs a little bit more, but I view him more in that game manager role than any type of playmaker. I think everybody else on this list can really make plays that can put their team over the top in big games. Cam Rising, I still have questions about that. He's a gamer. He really works hard. He's been around a while. He understands what's expected of him. But is he, like, when I look at this list, I think one of these things doesn't look like the other. And I think Cam Rising is the guy that just does not look, from a skill set perspective, from a talent perspective, I just don't think he's on the level of the other nine in this top 10 college football quarterback list from ESPN.
Fair enough. Great answer.
Yeah. What about you? Where are you at?
I'm going to go with you. You're much smarter than I.
Yeah. Now, I think there's a couple of quarterbacks we need to pay attention to potentially get into this top 10. And I think there's some guys.
Seth?
I don't know about Seth. We'll see what the stats look like. He may be able to put himself in this conversation. But I think there's the two guys that we look at that were in the top 100. As much as we feel like they haven't proven anything, and I feel like when you do a top 100 in college football, you should probably prove something before you get put into that list. But guys that can play themselves into this conversation, I think Miller Moss at USC with Lincoln Riley. We know he just
that
has
bowl game was crazy.
He has a Heisman factory.
That bowl game was
whether
nuts.
He's at Oklahoma or at USC, he is a Heisman factory at the quarterback position. Unto his own. So I think Miller Moss can do it. And then I want to see what Nico Amliava can do at Tennessee. I really like his skill set. I thought he played really well against Iowa in the bowl game, even against a really good defense. Didn't air the ball out all that much. But this year, with a little bit more at his disposal, you know, opening up the playbook a little bit more for him in his second year on campus, I think that this is a guy who can really make some strides because, yeah, he can throw the ball. He can air it out. He's got a lot of talent with his arm. But let's not sleep on the fact they're going to run the ball with him. They're going to use his legs. He's going to be a guy that we talk about being, you know, probably top five, maybe even a top three, if everything goes right, dual threat quarterback in the entire country.
We talked about the other day, establish the run.
Yeah.
You got to establish the run.
And I think they can do that this year.
I hope so.
Dylan Sampson, I think, is a really, really, really fast, capable runner, and I think he really fits the Josh Heupel system like a glove, and I think Nico really does it as well. I saw a guy by the name of Mackenzie Milton when he was at USC with Josh Heupel, and also he was there with Scott Frost. I sort of view him in that type of, and honestly, he's got more talent than Mackenzie Milton by a fair amount. He's taller, he's bigger, he's got more physical traits, but I think when you talk about a guy who can expose you in multiple ways, Nico definitely has all of the ability and more, and I'm expecting big things from him this year.
Yeah, I am very excited for the Tennessee football season. It feels like one of those where I'm not expecting too much, but just, you know, just try to beat Florida. As long as you beat Florida, I'll be happy.
Another thing.
You better beat Florida.
Another thing with this top 10 quarterback list, Cam Ward is going to be an interesting one to watch because if he has a really good year, get ready for some NFL draft conversations around him, like a day two pick.
You're a Cam Ward guy.
I've been a Cam Ward guy for a while.
You've been there.
But he just hasn't been in the best of situations. He was an incarnate word in then Washington State. This is the best situation he's been in. So this to me, even more so than what he was able to accomplish at Washington State, was really good stats,
impressive.
Really good production. Impressive as hell. You now have like a full cupboard you're dealing with. You have really good running backs. You have a good offensive line. You have the talent on the defensive side that can keep you in ball games. Cam Ward, you have to prove it this year. But I think more so than anything with him, it's just that entire Miami football program, right? This is a make-or-break year for Mario Cristobal. Not just Cam Ward, not just that program in general, but Mario Cristobal has to make something happen this year, or that Miami, going from Oregon to Miami may look foolish here relatively soon. Because Oregon upped their coaching game in Dan Lanning. He went back home. And Miami's getting a little, they're running out of patience. And if you have another 7-5, 8-4 year with the talent that you've brought in, Damian Martinez at running back, Cam Ward at quarterback, a lot of offensive line pieces, people are going to start looking at you sideways. Now, I have always been of the opinion, Mario Cristobal, there's been something missing, right? He gets into those big, he'll win a game at Ohio State, at Oregon, and then by the time he gets to the Pac-12 championship game, he's losing to Utah for the second time. You know, like, those are the things that always have worried me about Mario Cristobal. I think that that's still there. He's got to beat that charge, though. He's got to beat that charge heading into this year. But I'm higher on Miami, Cam Ward, the whole experience than a lot of people are.
I love your love for Cam Ward. You've been there since last year. You were a big guy on him. He had a great season.
Hell, I was when he was at Incarnate Word, made the transfer to Washington State, I knew this guy was going to be a stud.
You've had stock for a while.
I've had stock for a while. I hope that the stock, I think, has plummeted just a tad bit after last year, though. He's going
to. He's after you.
I need my stock to trend up this year, and I think that the surrounding pieces can help him do that. Now, we need to talk some Memphis football. We know that none of them got on any of these lists for ESPN. But on top of that, we have some Grizzly schedule. We'll do all this next with Jarvis Greer, formerly at WMC for 40 years, but now he's with Grind City Media doing the Grizz beat. So he will join next right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Worldwide Jarvo on the show. How about it? Jarvis Greer joins 40 years at WMC, followed by now at Grind City Media doing the Grizz Beat. He's on X at Jarvis Greer, WMC. Jarvis, how's it going?
Doing great, man. Glad to be back stateside. Ready to go play some football.
Yes, sir.
Watch.
Whatever. We understood what you were saying. Now, tell me about your experience over in Paris, though, before we get into anything.
Oh, man, it was awesome. If you ever have a chance to go to Paris, I mean, it is everything that's ever been written, sung, or, you know, whatever, wax poetic about, because it really is a city of light. It really is. It's just a certain feeling there that you get. And plus, everything is so old.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to like the 1500s, you know, we think, oh, 1800, 1850, that's old here. No, I see that and see another 700 years in the past. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like the architecture, the art, the people. And, you know, it was really cool because everybody spoke English. I mean, we heard that, you know, Parisians can be kind of snooty if you don't speak French to them. But they had a big mask nationwide text from the president, Emmanuel Macron, saying, everybody be nice to the to our visitors because they're bringing in billions of dollars.
Yes.
And so, but no, I mean, shoot, some of them speak English better than we do.
Yeah.
But we had no problems with the language barrier. We did try to, you know, bonjour, bonsoir, you know, au revoir and all that. We did try to do that to, you know, to try not to be the ugly American. And they were very, you know, France and the U.S. have a long, long, long relationship. It's funny, you know, going back to the Revolutionary War, you know, between the Americans and the British, wannabe Americans and the British. France, George Washington reached out to France for help. And France said, sure, we'll help, because they don't like the British at all.
Yeah.
You know, Britain is right across the English Channel, and they were always at war with them. So they said, yeah, sure, we'll help you guys out. And so there's a long-standing relationship between the Americans and the French.
So
the Olympics were just awesome.
What was on the docket outside of the Olympics? I mean, also, I do want to know what events you got to watch, that whole thing.
Okay, outside of the Olympics. Well, the first 3 days we were there, we did sightseeing. We went to Normandy, where the D-Day invasion was. And that's, I'm telling you, they got bullet trains there. And it's like going from Memphis to Nashville. It's about 180 miles. Did it in 2 hours on a train. And the train was very comfortable. And it's very easy to find your way around. And D-Day, that was like Utah Beach and Omaha Beach and the cemetery. The cemetery overlooks the Utah Beach. And it's just, oh, my God. It's right above the cliffs where they came ashore that day, June 6, 1944. And 9,300 Americans died that day. The cemetery is 9,500 or so right now. And that's the rest came in. They died subsequently of their injuries, and they wanted to be buried there, you know, with their comrades in arms. It is one of the most moving experiences you'll ever have. Because a lot of these guys, you know, were like 17 years old,
right.
18 years old. Just in, first thing, you're going to D-Day. You're going on the invasion. 6:30 a.m. on that morning, boom, you hit the beach and you're dead immediately. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's the most, one of the most moving things ever. And then we went to the Louvre.
Nice.
And we saw Mo. I call her Mo.
Yeah.
Mona Lisa. And Mona, it's like a postage stamp in a huge room that several thousand people can fit in. And it's like, the Louvre is like 35,000 artifacts, exhibits, and pieces of art, and, you know, all kind of stuff, jewels, crown jewels, and all. If you took 30 seconds just to stop and look at each one, they said it would take 3 years. And it's like, it was a former castle. It's in the middle, just about of Paris. It's a former castle for one of the Louis, Louis 15, 16, you know, whatever. it just goes on forever. And this every room chock full of all these paintings by Da Vinci and by Monet and by, you know, all these, you know, I'm not an art critic, but you know when you're seeing something.
Yeah, special. Did the Mona, I mean? Was the Mona Lisa experience moving?
It was really cool because this is it. This is what, you know, everybody talks about, you know, the Mona Lisa. Da Vinci did it. And it's like, you know, you expect this big, because a lot of the paintings in there would take up like the size of the wall of the entry wall in FedEx Forum. They're just huge tapestries. But this is like a postage stamp. It's not much bigger than a big screen TV. And everybody's jammed in there, and you try to work your way to the front so you can get a picture of it, and they keep you like 15 feet at least away from it. But, you know, but you could tell, I mean, it's like been restored several times, and a lot of the paintings in there, they look like 4K. They're artisans that they have working on those things, because a lot of them date back to like the 5th century, and they like leap off the canvas. So you know that you are seeing something that is truly remarkable, and I'll tell you this: where our hotel was near the Champs-Élysées. Mm-hmm. If you know the story of the Champs-Élysées, the Nazis walked through the Champs-Élysées when they invaded France and went through the Arc de Triomphe. The Arc de Triomphe is on one side of the Champs-Élysées, and the Olympic flame, the balloon, you know, that hosted the Olympic flame was on the other. You could stand in the middle and see both. And that was like, there were so many people there. We had gone out, like sidewalk cafes were everywhere. The first day we got there, we went to eat at one of those sidewalk cafes. And I said, what's all the commotion up there? Walk, you know, a couple of blocks more, we're on the Champs-Élysées.
Yeah.
And there's the Arc de Triomphe. And it's like, it took 30 years to build. It was commissioned by one of their kings. And it took them 30 years to build. And it is an incredible sight.
Yeah,
and we took bicycles to the Eiffel Tower, and everybody. We didn't see any fat Parisians at all because they're all walking or they're riding bikes.
Right,
and
right.
Only just a very small, like 4% of the population has a car. You know, their own mode of transport. Everybody takes public transport: the metro, the commuter train, you know, the rapid. Or a bus, and so everybody's walking. Everybody's whizzing by on bikes. Well, let's get our hotel had bikes, you know, that you could take. And so we said, well, we'll find our way to the Eiffel Tower, which is only about a mile and a half from where we were staying. But it's like you take your life in your hands because these people are whizzing by and there are roundabouts everywhere. And they're like 15 lanes wide on these roundabouts. You know, we don't have very many roundabouts in Memphis or in this country, really. But it's like, how do these people know where to get in and get out? And when do you, you know, take your turn? You know, and it's, but, you know, we made it. We didn't die. And you get over there. The Eiffel Tower is the most massive man-made structure I have ever seen. It's like 1,000 feet tall. And it's like the legs of it, you know, there's four legs and it goes up to a point at the top. And it just was. And then they have the Olympic rings on it.
That was really cool.
Yeah,
that was really cool. What events did you get to go to, just real quick?
Olympics. We saw track and field at Stade de France. Stade de France seats 80,000. They built it in 92 to host World Cups soccer matches. And, you know, it's the national stadium of France. And, you know, if you thought the pyramid was tight-packed, oh, my God, you're like...
right on top of each other.
Close to elbows. next to each other, you know. But it's so everybody from the world is in there, and you're there to see the event. So, and it's like, it's really modern looking on the outside, but there are no creature comforts. But the Olympics, like, we saw the best event we saw was Quincy Hall, the American 400-meter hurdle. We saw that, and, like, we were right, if you, NASCAR terms, we were right at the apex of turn 3 and 4, and we were 10 rows back. And they come running around that corner right by us, and he was nowhere in the picture. And then down the stretch, he like, I don't know how he did it. He was just kept moving up and moving up, and it was almost like they died at the end, and he nipped the Great Britain runner at the tape. And it was just amazing. And they both retired. They both took their shoes, their cleats off, and put them next to the track. They both retired at the end of that race.
Yep.
And it was just, the crowd was roaring, and it was one of the most amazing scenes ever. And the pole vault pit was right in front of us.
Yeah.
And that was American Katie Moon got the silver medal in the pole vault. And let's see, we also saw, of course, we saw U.S. men's basketball in the semifinals.
Oh, you got to, you were at that? Oh, yeah, my gosh, I'm jealous.
And,
golly.
That was the night Steph scored 36. And it's like, you know, my wife was like, Gummit, we spent all this damn money on these tickets, and we're going to lose. I mean, you know, we were down 18.
And that's going to be the, I mean, when we get the documentary, that's going to be the focused game, the one against Serbia. Coming back, 95-90, that was wild.
95-90.
You should have heard me and Connor over here stateside here in this studio watching it on a phone. We were going nuts. Connor let out a couple of eagle screeches by the end of that game.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's something because, you know, all the French people and everybody else who were in the stands, the NBA is global, first of all.
Yeah.
LeBron James is a global – and we saw several John Morant jerseys there. And now I'm talking about the city editions, several different city edition John Morant jerseys. And they were not Americans. These were people from, you know, other countries. Ja's a global superstar. And they knew when we, before the game, we sat at this cafe next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
To the arena, and this guy from France, no, I was wearing my John Morant jersey. I was repping the M on that. And he said, Ja, how's his shoulder? I mean, he knew everything about – he knew the, you know, the whole thing about all the injuries and all that stuff. But his biggest fan, he was a big LeBron fan. Everybody is a LeBron James fan.
Yeah.
And so and even the Parisians were LeBron fans, you know, because they knew they were going to play France next in the finals because France won the earlier semifinal. But, no, that game was just totally awesome. And to hear the – you know, the national anthem being played there. But for the French fans and the other fans to see these NBA stars up, you know, pretty much up close, the Bercy Arena is kind of like a larger version of the Mid-South Coliseum. Seats about 15,000. And so you're pretty close to the action. And to see all the stars that they had just seen on TV. Like, we get to see them at FedEx Forum, you know, several times a year. But that's like their first time seeing them in person. And to see that was also awesome.
Yeah.
And the last thing we did was we saw the men's soccer final between France and Spain. France was the favorite. Spain was the defending Olympic champion. And it went double overtime, and Spain ended up winning. But that was at Parc des Princes, which is right next to Roland Garros, you know, where they play the French Open. And that's where their top-level soccer team, PSG, Paris Saint-Germain, plays. And that was a lot like the Liberty Bowl, actually, the way it is and the way it is inside, except they're all chair-backed. But that's also pretty tight packed. Seats about 45,000. Packed to everything, every event we went to was packed to the rafters with people from all over the world. And the whole thing about the world being in one spot, you know, and you see people from South Africa, you see people from Taiwan, you see people from China, you see people from Budapest, you know, from all over everywhere. And they're all there for, you know, to support their nation. And that was just a great thing.
Yeah.
It was totally awesome.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you got to see that semifinal game for the U.S. Men's National Team. Now, I want to get into your sort of Ja Morant FedEx Forum conversation. We got the schedule release yesterday. Looks like the first 20 games, relatively manageable, and you certainly hope they manage them well. I think I was talking to Jeff Calkins yesterday. He had them at 14-6. I had them at 13-7 in those first 20. But those are manageable. The rest of the schedule is relatively tough. It just shows that the Western Conference, there's no gimmies anymore. Like, the Spurs have upped their game. Anymore. I mean, the only gimmies, seemingly, are the Jazz and the Trailblazers. But outside of that, Western Conference is just very, very hard.
Yeah, no, the West is tough, but, you know, it's one of those out-of-sight, out-of-mind things with the Grizzlies. They forgot about us. And we had Rob Fisher on our show, Grizzbeat, yesterday. You know, Rob does he is a pre-halftime and post-game host for the Grizzlies on their TV on Valley's. And, he said it's the Remind Me Tour. Hashtag Remind Me. Because, hey, we're going to remind everybody how good we are. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Because they done forgot about Ja Morant. And they done forgot about Desmond Bane. And all the rest of them. Because they were all hurt last year. There was nobody on the roster. And so, okay, they won 27 games without them for the most part. Now, there was only three games where all the big, the big-name Grizzlies players play together. The whole season. Only three games. And when Ja was there just for those nine games, they went 6-3 and beat some good teams along the way. And they just forgot about the Grizzlies. So I'm not worried about. I'll put it this way: yeah, did Oklahoma City get better? Yeah, they got better. Well, they're going to have to be better because I do believe the Grizzlies have improved. And you mentioned like the first part of the season seems to be a little bit simpler path for the Grizzlies to rack up some wins. I think it needs to be that way in order for Zach Edey to get his feet wet in NBA basketball. He's a monster, by the way. If you have ever stood – you're a big guy, Gabe.
No, that's a different level of big, man.
And I think that'll help for him to get his feet wet. But I think, if all he has to do is be able to run the pick and roll and just be big and get rebounds, if he can do that, then I think, that'll solve the Steven Adams question.
Yeah.
And I think he might be a bit more offensively gifted than Steven Adams was. Because Steven Adams never looked to score. And they don't need Zach Edey to score because they got scorers on this team at every level. So, if he works out, I think, we're looking at another, top two, top three
and
team.
Yeah, you mentioned it as the Remind Me Tour. I have talked about it, since really last offseason. We know how last season went. But I like the Grizzlies coming from under the radar. Like, that's where their best results have come from. And I think Ja Morant, feeling relatively disrespected, we have seen his best ball be played. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we don't want it to become a distraction to the point where that's all you're paying attention to is the outside noise. But we have seen that work out pretty well for Ja Morant and this team.
Well, we've seen a lot of these guys, the high dollar athletes, the ones that people pay the top dollar to go see, they always seem to, I think I'm talking about Jordan and the rest of these guys, they always seem to, they find some way to have a chip on their shoulder, some way to have some extra motivation to get them to play at the highest of high levels. And I think, Ja's one of those dudes, man. And, we've seen fourth quarter Ja, we've seen Ja when he's, when he's at the top of his game, there's just no one like him. There's just no one like him, the things that he can do. And then you add the fact that he's got shooters. They brought Luke Kennard back, and which, was an inevitability. They cleared up some space with Z trading him as Zaire Williams, and now they've got, some flexibility if needed at the trade deadline.
Yep.
And, they're positioned to do well. I think David Aldridge, ESPN, said that they were like dead last in his poll.
He's at the Athletic now, I think, but
at the Athletic.
Dead last for their offseason is a little much. It's bizarre.
It's a little much. And he did a caveat. He just said he loves the Grizzlies, but there was no swing for the fence move. And
right.
I think that's what he was basing his, determination on. But they didn't have to swing for the fence. They already did that. And, they made the Marcus Smart trade last year. Okay, they've already got guys that they drafted that are now in their second year, like Vince Williams and G.G. Jackson, who may have something in those guys, and then you still bring back Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. and not to mention Brandon Clark off the bench, who's, you know, one of the best six men that there is. And, you know, you've really got something to work with there. And so you didn't have to make any big moves in order to be, you know, one of the top teams in the West, no matter what anybody else did in the offseason.
Yeah. Now, last thing here, Jarvis, that I want to get to, Memphis football. We did see the press box come down. Prescott box came down. But I want to talk about the team real quick.
Mm-hmm.
What is, like, truly just digging down into it? It doesn't even have to be a position group. If it is a position group, that's fine as well. What's your, and I don't think there's a long list of worries, but what's your biggest worry about this team heading into this year?
Wow. It's like things that you need to check this box on. I would say overall defense, because you got performers on offense with Seth Hennigan, Rock Taylor, Blake Humsey, the running back Mario Anderson that they got from USC, who University of South Carolina. Yep. It looks like he's going to be a good, somebody who can get you good yards. Offensive line, they brought in some big dudes from some good schools that have played well, and from some smaller schools that are really, really good. And it's just defense, if you could just stop some people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And it's like the game now, Gabe, you know, it's geared to offense. The stuff that we could do on defense when I was playing, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah. Physicality's gone out there on the outside.
Yeah. You can't do that. So other teams are going to score. They are going to score. It's just don't let them score so much.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they could just slow down, you know, just keep teams. If they can just keep teams off the scoreboard a little bit, I think that, you know, we could be looking at running the table, because I think you might have to run the table, you know, to get in that where everybody wants to be, and that's the CFP, College Football Playoff. But, you know, they are good enough, I think, in their other positions. Now, they brought in some good people defensively from the kid they got from Tennessee, the other linebacker to play next to Chandler
Elijah
Martin.
Aaron.
I think that's going to help. They've got looks like they might have a pass rusher that they got, I think, from, was it Indiana?
Oklahoma, Reggie Grimes.
Yes. So that's going to help if you got a guy you know can get back there and pressure the quarterback. They've got two defensive backs coming back. That they got the free safety coming back that's been there from White Station.
Yep.
And then the kid that was hurt last year, they got hurt early in the season at Arkansas State last year at corner. He's really good. And then they got a couple of transfers in that, they come with the credentials. So we'll see. But I think the biggest thing is the defensive coordinator, Hankins. It's going to make a big difference, because I really like the one that we had before. He came from Ohio State. He's a really good guy. Remember, he said, "I'm trying. I just can't figure out these." He's used to playing when he was at Ohio State.
Okay,
see ball, go get ball.
Yep.
You know, guys that could just be hummus, that could just go wreck the house to go get the football. And now, but Hankins is used to playing with guys that are on more Memphis level. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That, you know, may not be as big, but is a hell of a football player. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That you got to figure out different schemes for them to get in. And you saw what Hankins did, switch things up for the Liberty Bowl against Iowa State. I mean, they end up with 0 yards?
0 rushing yards, yep.
You know, hey, if you can do that, if it's just a somewhat of a, all you need is, you don't need a tremendous jump. You just need some sort of jump, because I believe the offense is going to be one of the highest scoring teams in the country.
Yep, I'm excited. I'd say the one question for me, how do you manage expectation? We've seen that go other ways.
Yeah.
And I will say, to your defensive point, I can tell you from my days in college and playing with the defenses I played with outside of 2014, that was a great defense with Bobby McCain and Martin Effetti and Terry Redden, all those guys. Those last three years, it does get frustrating as an offense to have to deal with, okay, the other team's going to score 30-plus. We're going to have to go outscore every single team. Even in that AAC championship game against UCF in 2017, score 55 points and you lose by a touchdown because the other team has 62. That's frustrating, but we'll see how they manage it all.
Well, I tell you what, that other team, though, that was UCF, and they were good.
Still
playing quarterback now? He's
getting
his, like, 18th year?
Well, they had Shaquem Griffin.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style.
Ooh.
You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at MyBob's.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.